we hear things differently. There's some salespeople I could go to them and I could be like, hey, do you want to go close that deal or do you need me to do it for you? And then there's other salespeople where I know that it will influence them the best to be like, hey, go over there, say this, you know what you're doing. You did this just last week. You're going to be fine. I promise you. Come back to me. Tell me exactly what they say. We're going to work through this. And that's going to give them peace of mind to be able to move forward and get accomplished what they want to do. But it's not always just talking to somebody the same way every single time. You kind of have to think about how they'll receive it.
All right, gang, welcome to this episode of the Dealer Playbook Podcast. Sitting down with my pal, Gabriella Binion. She is the general manager at Fox Valley Volkswagen. I am so excited to talk about upward mobility. How do we grow? Stay tuned. I want to thank this episode's sponsor, AutoFi. AutoFi helps dealers like you sell smarter, not harder, online and now in your showroom. Dealerships with AutoFi sell cars faster with higher satisfaction and more profit. Go to autofi.com/dealer playbook and start selling smarter today. The car business is rapidly changing and modern car dealers are meeting the demand. I'm Michael Cirillo and together we'll explore the best strategies, ideas, and tools to create a thriving life in and out of the business. This is the Dealer Playbook. Gabby, thanks so much for joining me on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
I got to know right out of the gates. Tell me, how did you get into automotive to begin with? Like, did you do the trust fall that we all do where we were working somewhere else and we're like, I'm just going to get into automotive. Was it a family deal? Like, how did you get into the business?
Yeah. My family owns the auto group that I work for. My dad, he had come over to the United States from the Philippines when he was.
Oh, no way.
So he has a really cool immigration story, and this industry is amazing. It changes lives. I talked about that, you know, at the auto show this year. But he was an immigrant and he really didn't have a way of affording college. He tried to go to college and had to drop out because he couldn't afford it. And he ended up selling cars and he got really good at it to the point where he was going to go back to college. And the dealer he worked for at the time, he was a big dealer out of the Chicagoland area, Jerry Gleason of Golf Mill Ford. He had told him, I think you, not that I'm trying to discourage higher education, but I think you might have something here. And so he decided to stay in it. And the rest is kind of history. How that relates to me, though, is, you know, I watched my dad grow up in the industry. It was something that came very natural to me. It was something I've always wanted to do.
Yeah.
So when it was time to kind of decide what was next after high school, I was like, well, I'll just go into the industry. I grew up around, and, you know, neither of my parents were college educated. And, you know, a lot of our employees, it was just kind of what I was used to seeing as the example set before me. And one thing he was really serious about, he's like, hey, I don't care whatever you do after you graduate college. I don't really care. But this is something I wasn't able to do for myself. And I really want this for my children. So if you could do that for me, that would be great. And my parents felt very strongly about that. So I went to Loyola University, Chicago, got an education in entrepreneurship. And yeah, from there afterwards, I was always actually supposed to work for my family's auto group. But kind of as graduation drew closer, I went to one of our dealerships right before graduation and I bought a car because I needed one. In Chicago, you don't really have to have a car. So
right.
I was going to be moving home, had to go buy a car. I bought a Volkswagen Tiguan from one of our locations. And when I went there, you know, I'm the dealer's kid. they rolled out the red carpet for me and something just in my mind, in my heart was like, I can't do this. I can't work for dad. I can't work amongst these awesome people, but, and be, you know, kind of, I had to navigate away on my own and I knew I had to do it on my own. I definitely understand the amount of privilege that comes with, you know, having a PhD, as they say, as a dealership. And I'm really, really thankful for that opportunity that my family's been able to give me, but I definitely had to go do it on my own. And that's where the trust fall came in, on sending my resume out to any place that would meet with me in Chicago. I printed a cover letter resume, sent it to every dealership in the 606, and went on a dozen interviews, and finally ended up going with a really amazing Land Rover Jaguar Volvo dealership called Howard Orloff Imports. And they were second generation, 60 years in business, and there was really no better place that I could have been to help me kind of grow into my own.
First of all, we have to unpack some things here.
Sorry, I just was like,
No, you don't understand how much my heart is swelling with emotion right now. And I'm going to tell you why, so I don't sound like the creepy dude you just met. First of all, hey, gang, before the show, I asked Gabby, I was like, I'm learning Spanish right now. It's taking everything of me to not say Gabriela Biñón. And then she drops a nugget on me that she has family history in the Philippines, which you don't know this yet, but lots of people who follow the show know I lived in the Philippines for 2 years. And now I'm realizing it is, in fact, Gabriel Aviñón.
Yeah, a lot of people think it's French. They're like, Aviñón.
No, it's Aviñón. Okay, so there's that. Love that. And it's not PhD for you. It's it's Tatay Ania Ang Dealership. Dad had a dealership. So I love that already. That's number two. Number three, it hits close to home because also family business. My parents are immigrants. They immigrated from, my dad's from Italy, immigrated to Canada. That was like, you know, call it the Canadian, the North American dream. And I love hearing about that the American dream is alive and well. Like that is so, it's so fascinating to me that with enough vision, persistence, dedication, commitment, focus, insert all of the words here, that look at what your family has been able to create, which is legit the best thing that could possibly, like, it is a proof point to the thesis that the American dream is alive and well.
Yeah.
So like, I feel like we need to get your dad on the show too. Like I want to do another episode with the both of you. Is he still active day to day in the organization?
He is. Yes. He definitely has taken a little bit of a step back. My sister is also in the business. So between the three of us, we tackle things quite well. And that gives him a little bit of an opportunity. My sister has three boys. I have three nephews under the age of six. So he loves to care for them. And while we're, you know, at work, he does a lot of work from home, believe it or not.
Yeah, good for him.
Sometimes you can get a lot of things done when there's not fires you're putting out right and left. But yeah, he is in the day-to-day business. And I love what you said about the American dream, because I think a lot of times, especially with the way things in this country are very politically driven, it can be seen as, you know, I've heard it before, the American dream, it's not around anymore. It's dead. It's not as easy to achieve as it once was. And although those things may be true, I was raised by like a true through and through patriot. You know, when you grow up in a third world country, which I did not, but my father did, you know, he doesn't really take anything for granted. And he just has a really interesting way of looking at things, and yeah, lucky to have him as a role model.
That perspective, it, like, just the value in that perspective. Just yesterday, here's the TMI. I'm talking to a life insurance guy yesterday, and he's asking me all these questions, and he's like, oh, so you moved here from Canada to America. We're in Dallas area now. And I'm like, yeah. He's like, so what do you think about when, you know, everything that's happening in America, the administration and this and that? I'm like, bro, you need to go live in a different country for a while. Mm-hmm. Like, straight up, I am so grateful that I grew up in Canada, but that I also got to live in the Philippines. Cause now that I'm here, I'm like, dude, there are no, okay, yeah, we got problems, this and that. But I'm just like, no, to your point, American Dream, alive and well. If you put your mind to it, there is bar none no better place that has the resources to make success happen as there is in the United States of America, just period. Hey, I hope you're enjoying this episode of the Dealer Playbook. And before we hop back in, I want to thank today's sponsor, AutoFi. AutoFi helps dealers like you sell smarter, not harder, on your dealership website and now in your showroom too. AutoFi solves the everyday problems dealers actually face, like bottlenecks at the sales desk, customer distrust, and decision overload. Their all-new showroom solution includes deal estimation, desking, lender routing, and an F&I menu, all in one powerful platform. Dealerships with AutoFi sell cars faster, with higher satisfaction, and more profit. In fact, dealers make an average of $641 higher back-end PVR on AutoFi deals versus their non-AutoFi deals. Go to autofi.com/dealer playbook and start selling smarter today. All right, let's hop back into this episode. I want to ask you this now, shifting a bit. I see your most recent, this is a post by Pablo Dissi, the president and CEO of Volkswagen Group of America. And it is an award that you've won. So now we know how you got into the business. At what point does it become real for you that you're like, oh, but I'm going to make some waves? Like, yes, dad started the business and brought us into it by virtue of the family, but I'm going to stand on my own two feet. When's that light bulb moment? And what are some of your thoughts about what you want to do differently to put yourself out there?
Yeah. You know, I think that although a lot of the recognition, it's nice. It can be a little uncomfortable, but although it is a nice thing, I think that for me, it has to do more with earning things kind of through my store and through the direction that I bring to the table as the general manager of my store, which I am a GM of a Volkswagen dealership in the Chicagoland area. And I think that especially being young, being a woman, being second generation, there are a lot of things and different challenges that come along with that. You know, I have a lot of people working for me that are double my age and, you know, not used to maybe my management style. However, kind of the experience I was able to get by going off on my own, working my way up somebody else's company, and then being able to come back to my family business and kind of work in a couple different areas and then being put in this opening that was available. You don't always get the buy-in right away, but for me, the biggest achievement was being able to just be consistent with my message I was delivering. I think a lot of it has to do with when people, like, seeing is believing. So maybe some of the things I might say are a beautiful sentiment, but at the end of the day, like, how is that going to lead us to success as an organization? I think that for my store in particular, that started with culture. You know, it's interesting because my family had an auto group. When I joined it, we had three stores. And when I started working my way around the three stores, you start to realize, you know, there's my father, Emir. He has his kind of will and what he wants, how his businesses are ran. But I started realizing when you go to the three stores, there's these subcultures that get created. Mm. And when I came into the store that I'm currently at, the Volkswagen dealership, there were some definite things that I was like, you know, we need to stop speaking fluent sarcasm because it's covering up a lot of these big problems. And I appreciate the sarcasm in one aspect because it's like, hey, we're addressing the issue, but we're being playful about it so that we're not creating real, you know, there's no like chaos or fighting or anything like that. But it's also not constructive. And for me, like, I'm a big believer of the best way around is through. So let's dissect that for a second. Well, I know you joked about it, but let's talk about it. And once people see, okay, well, she sees an issue and maybe they were just, you know, they were saying it in jest just to bring it to my attention or to just, you know, just joke around, whatever it might be. I want to tackle the issues. I want to make real change happen here. And seeing the buy-in from my employees, bringing new people on board that do support that vision and do have those leadership traits that I'm looking for. I think that that was kind of the big thing that was able to see the store kind of rise in terms of success. I'm in St. Charles, Illinois, so it's a smaller suburb, about 50 miles outside Chicago. So mm-hmm. when you see a point like that start getting noticed and doing really well compared to a lot of large Chicagoland suburbs, I think that that's kind of where it started.
Yeah, I love that culture. Speaking to culture is your starting point. We care a lot about this conversation through the podcast. I know in my own agency and businesses, we care a lot about culture as the starting point. And I love that this clear example you give of, oh, there's like this weird passive aggressive Chandler Bing sarcasm, you know, going on here. Like, could you be less crappy? Hey, hold on. Let's talk about what do you actually, I love this kind of facts over emotions thing. Let's get to the heart of the issue. You mentioned prior to that, you referenced your leadership style. And so I'm curious, how would you define your leadership style?
Right. My leadership style, I think that I'm a bit direct. I think that kind of handling things and just saying what you mean and meaning what you say, there's a lot of importance with that because I'm a millennial. So I feel like I know how to speak to other millennials, and I inherited a lot of the employees that were at the store when I arrived there, but it really was interesting to see how the different leaderships that were there before, you know, there's this old school mentality and mindset in the industry. I've worked for some old school dealers and mindsets before, and I didn't like it. And it made me not feel valued. You know, there's just a lot of things that are within that I wanted to be the difference that right. I would do moving forward. So I would say that even though I'm very direct, like I just want my intentions to be known. I like to listen to people. I think that a lot of times half the battle with a lot of different things in life, whether it be, you know, talking to customers, service related issues, whether it's, you know, closing a deal or a customer that's upset about something or dealing with employees, that's a whole spectrum there. It's about just hearing people out because sometimes that's really all they need is to be heard and get something off their chest. And, you know, I'm not a counselor by any means, but giving somebody a platform to speak on and talk about what changes they would like to see. Like I know when I came in, there were some issues in my service department with technicians. And the first thing I had asked them was like, hey, if you were given the keys to the service department tomorrow, it's your show, you're running it. What's the first thing that you would change? And it's usually those little things that affect them pretty deeply from their position. And that kind of helps me see what in total needs to be worked on as a business. Because everybody thinks that they know what's going to make a business successful. But a lot of times it's also just sharing information that a lot of people keep close to them because they're afraid of losing their influence or their power. Like there's not really a place for ego in that because the more you know, sometimes you don't know what you don't know. So if I then say, well, this is why we do that, they're like, oh, well, that makes sense. I can understand that now. And that's just kind of about getting that buy-in from people. And I also think it has a lot to do with the way that you talk to people. We hear things differently. There's some salespeople I could go to them and I could be like, hey, do you want to go close that deal or do you need me to do it for you? And then there's other salespeople where I know that it will influence them the best to be like, hey, go over there, say this, you know what you're doing. You did this just last week. You're going to be fine. I promise you. Come back to me. Tell me exactly what they say. We're going to work through this. And that's going to give them peace of mind to be able to move forward and get accomplished what they want to do. But it's not always just talking to somebody the same way every single time. You kind of have to think about how they'll receive it.
This brings up such a good point. I love this. It requires a great amount of sensitivity on the part of the leader to even just express what you said, that each person, like you could even say the same sentence to a cohort of people and each one of them would actually hear or interpret something different. You know, I'm thinking about the two examples you just gave. You could have five team members who all they heard was, she doesn't think I can do my job. And then you have five other team members who are like, holy crap, I can't believe how much my leader loves and respects and wants to see me grow. So having a heightened sensitivity to how your team learns, how they will be most receptive, I think is an incredibly valuable lesson. And no less being in a position where, like you said, coming into it, second gen, female in a predominantly male industry, and saying, no, but I got to forge my own path. I am the leader of this organization. I also love that you brought up clear, concise communication. We all know this, but it somehow gets lost in translation. Like, guys, wars start because we don't communicate effectively. And you're saying, I want to be clear and concise, and I'm doing it because you deserve that. You deserve clear and concise. A pal of mine, Glenn Lundy, he teaches his group, and I hear him say it often, to be clear is to be kind. And I want to reference that because I think, you know, what I'm picking up, what you're saying, is that you're saying, even though I'm clear and direct, doesn't mean I can't be friendly or kind about it or mean or whatever. You're simply just saying, let's address the fact so we can move forward in accelerated pace.
1,000%. Absolutely. I don't think that you always have to, I don't know. One of the things my dad actually taught me, because it's kind of hard at first. It can be intimidating to address a group of people, be very direct with people. But we, you know, the more I thought about it, we do that type of stuff every day, whether it's speaking with the customer, giving them just bad news about their car, about their credit, about their payments, whatever it might be. You can do it with tact and you can do it with a kind heart. And when you, it's kind of like finding your selling style. A lot of different salespeople have, mine's right. Always been the very professional, you know, I'll smile with you and tell you bad news and try to be empathetic as much as possible. But the same goes for, I think, managing people. It's definitely no easy feat, but, you know, I think you just have to stay true to your style and try to find common ground with them.
I love it. Here's my last questions for you. You brought up millennial. Hey, just so everybody's on the same page, she brought up the millennial thing, okay? Like, I know I got gray hairs here, but I think I technically qualify as a millennial, but, you know, car business, right? I mean, car business. You brought up millennial, general manager, leader. You brought up old school tactics. From your vantage point, in your experience, where do you want to get things? Like, what's your mind? Where is your mind headed for where you want to ultimately do things for your dealership?
That's a good question. I think that right now we're coming out of a really interesting time in the industry. You know, we just had the worldwide pandemic, some inventory shortages, it's crazy when I look at it. And when we just got done, you know, halfway through first quarter now, which is crazy, looking at forecasting for the year, all of that stuff. There's a lot of things at play in the market and it can be a little intimidating, but I think that constantly being open to changes, constantly being open to innovation, whether that's marketing or technology or, you know, personnel is my biggest thing right now, is trying to find good people. You know, our auto group, the way my father raised me, the way the example I had set before me is it really starts at the personnel level. If we're not just looking for somebody who will fog a mirror, we're looking for people who, you know, our mission statement is to move people. It's Fox Valley Auto Group, prepare to be moved. And we're not just talking about in the physical sense of the word, where we move people by putting them in a new car and servicing their car so that they can move. We really mean emotionally, financially, spiritually, even. There's a lot of different ways that we can create change. And we found that by having that as our mission statement and showing that being the change that we want to see in the industry, that's created a customer base for us and a community that has that has really just flourished over the last 5-10 years. So I think that starting there with being true to what we believe in and our community involvement has been very impactful. But just having the right people in the right seats within the organization, continuing to grow them and identify future leaders within the organization so that we do have the ability to grow. Because that's the big thing right now. Everybody's growing. There's a lot of activity happening in the market. And, you know, I asked other dealers out there, do you feel prepared for that? Because mostly the answer is no. And I don't know how we get to the next place unless we have the right people. That's number one.
I love it. We could talk about this forever. I'm not going to do that to you. last question for Gabriel Abinyon ang Higalanako. I had to throw it in there. Now everybody knows. Now we're going to get hit up by the Filipino.
You know, I am half Italian as well. My mother's maiden name is Maniscalco.
Like Sebastian Maniscalco?
Like, but not in relation to.
Wait, so on the Filipino side, we do this, right, in photos? And the Italian side just does this all the time. Holy smoke. See, you know you got me when I had to throw my glasses down like this. Gabby, how can those listening and watching get in touch with you and connect with you?
Yeah, you could look me up on LinkedIn, Gabrielle Abinyon. Instagram, Gabby Abinyon's my handle. Fox Valley Volkswagen or foxvalleyautogroup.com.
Love it. Thanks so much for joining me on the Dealer Playbook Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Dealer Playbook Podcast. If you enjoyed tuning in, please subscribe, share, and hit that like button. You can also join us and the DPB community on social media. Check back next week for a new Dealer Playbook episode. Thanks so much for joining.